You are merely the means. I possess the energy he needs, but he refuses to take it from me. You, however, he thinks it was your presence that helped him escape the step dream, and you must mean a great deal to him if he sought you out at the Countess's house. Therefore, I am going to transfer some of the energy I possess to you. You, in turn, will find a way to convince him to take it from you. No more idle chatter. Will you assist my son willingly, or shall I force it upon you?
Aijana brandished her hand in the air. Her fingernails extended like blades, all save the one on her index finger, which appeared to have broken off. She began her advance toward Renata again. Renata's foot found the rolling pin on the floor next to a sack of flour, but it would be no use. There was no stopping a mother motivated by love, even if the love was awry, or especially if it was awry. There was also no reasoning with a girl who was in love, even if the boy she loved wanted to do something with which she did not agree. It was Nikolai. Renata would give herself to whatever he needed. She stepped over the rolling pin and around the counter. She put on her bravest face.
"I'll help Nikolai willingly," Renata said. "Just tell me what to do."
Chapter 29. Nikolai had slept nearly an entire day, and when he woke in the early evening, he felt brighter and more buoyant than before. Yet paradoxically, he also appeared deeper grey. He rolled out of his bed at the Black Moth and tried to use his revitalized power to cast a shroud about himself, such that he would appear like an ordinary person. But his silhouette form seemed to fight back, and the shroud kept sputtering. Nikolai furrowed his brow. It was both a relief that his edges were no longer blurred, and a concern that his shadow form seemed to be growing more stubborn. And how? Was it simply rest that re-energized him? Yet he'd slept plenty in the step dream, and he had woken only once feeling more powerful, as he did today. But did it matter? The more powerful the energy that coursed within him, the less Nikolai seemed to care. In fact, as he stretched himself fully awake, a cold swell rushed inside him, and he laughed as he remembered he had a throne to take, and a Cesarevich to kill. Speaking of which, Nikolai needed to visit a toy shop on Nevsky Prospect. He had something fun in store for Pasha. Well, perhaps fun was not the right word for how Pasha was about to feel, but it would be fun for Nikolai. The thought made him colder, and stronger still. He made his way from Tsarnaya Square to the nicer part of St. Petersburg, to a shop with a window display that featured a doll's holiday fete.
"C'est parfait," Nikolai said as he slipped inside the door.
He cast a quick enchantment to topple a stack of boxes in the back, to draw away the shopkeeper's attention, and while alone, Nikolai pocketed the miniature tables, tiny platters, and Christmas garlands from the window display. He took the dolls in tulle gowns and frock coats and trousers, as well as a small orchestra. He snuck out of the shop before the boxes in the back had even been gathered. A little girl and her father approached, and Nikolai pressed himself into the narrow alley next to the store.
"The dolls' party is gone,"
the girl said as she peered into the window.
"But I'm going to give you something even better in its place," Nikolai thought.
"Someone probably bought the set," her father said.
The girl pouted but followed her father as they continued on their way. Their shadows lingered. Nikolai squinted at them. The shadows stretched out, thinner and thinner, like black taffy. One end connected to the girl and her father, the other end stuck to, or attracted to, Nikolai.
"Shoo!"
he whispered, waving them off. They stayed a second longer. Then the shadows suddenly retracted and sprang back into normal shape behind the people they belonged to. Nikolai blinked. Had that really happened? Or was he losing his mind? He shook his head. He must have imagined it. Shadows didn't have wills of their own. Or did they? He looked at his own shadow hands, but he quickly shoved them into the pockets of his greatcoat. His fingers grazed his coin purse.
Oh, I didn't pay for the dolls, did I?
But Nikolai paused before he went back inside the toy shop. Never before would it have occurred to him to steal from a store. And yet here he was, paying for the dolls as an afterthought.
What's gotten into me?
He thought, as he retrieved a stack of rubles. He set the money in the window where the display had been. He left and hurried down Nevsky Prospect.
What do right and wrong mean, anyway?
Nikolai asked aloud. Could something seem wrong when isolated, such as helping oneself to a dollhouse set, but be right in the larger scheme? It was like fighting a duel. Gentlemen fought them to rectify insults and to defend their honor every day. Sometimes a duel resulted in death, but it was unquestionably the right thing to do. Which was precisely what Nikolai was doing now by challenging Pasha, protecting his honor and making Pasha pay for his betrayal.
Besides, I'd make a better Tsar.
Nikolai could offer a perspective to ruling the empire that Pasha couldn't, for Pasha had grown up in the opulent confines of the Winter Palace, whereas Nikolai had scraped his way up from nothing. He'd supported himself by doing odd jobs, delivering packages for Bezetan sons, sharpening swords and knives for the officers in the Imperial Army, assisting with dance lessons from Madame Allard. Unlike Pasha, Nikolai knew what life was like for ordinary Russians, and they deserved to have a Tsar who understood their lot. That was what Nikolai told himself, anyway. He reached the embankments of the Neva River, now a vast expanse of empty ice, a blank slate on which to host the most spectacular fete the city had ever seen. Nikolai snapped his fingers, and a heavy note card appeared. Pavel Alexandrovich Romanov invites all of St. Petersburg to a holiday fete. 11 o'clock tonight, 19 December 1825, upon the frozen Neva River. Then Nikolai snapped his fingers, multiplying the fake invitation. When ready, he would send them flying away to every person in the city. The people were barely pacified by Vika's Christmas tree. It wouldn't take much to tilt them to the other side of the scales, to fear and hysteria again.
Let's see what they think of Pasha's party and his supposedly good use of magic.
But first, he had to create it. Nikolai conjured blades onto the bottoms of his boots and skated onto the ice. No one could see him working here in the dark, which was what he wanted. Nothing would be unveiled until everything for the party was ready, to the last detail. He stopped in the center of the river and knelt, taking all the dolls and other pieces from the pockets of his coat and setting them on the ice. There had been only 2 long wooden tables in the window display, each covered with a blue satin cloth, and a handful of chairs with cream-colored cushions, but the paucity was not a problem for Nikolai. He passed his hands over the tiny furniture, and it multiplied, and multiplied again and again, until he had 100 tables and more than 1,000 chairs. Then he flung out his arms, and the tables and chairs followed his arc, throwing themselves across the frozen river until they were spread out, evenly spaced, over nearly a mile. Nikolai squeezed his eyes shut and concentrated on each table, each chair, seeing them in miniature. In his mind, they began to grow. Just as he'd done for the dream benches on Letney Isle, only by 100-fold. Wood creaked all around Nikolai as the tables and chairs stretched. Inch by inch, they expanded from doll-like proportions to human ones. By the time they were full size, Nikolai was drenched in sweat. He opened his eyes slowly. He could not see all the tables and chairs in the dark, but they were there, lined up across the Neva River, ready to be resplendent with a feast.
Compétent,
he said to himself. Not a compliment, but an acknowledgement of sufficiency, so far. He wiped the sweat from his brow. Next, the decorations. Nikolai looked down at the pile of gold garlands and bells and velvet bows, but he had no walls upon which to hang them.
I have birds.
Nikolai made a series of chirps. A minute later, the sky filled with the soft murmur of hundreds of wings flapping.
Bonsoir,
he said to the stone sparrows he'd created during the game to watch and attack Vika. He smiled at their quiet elegance. As with the table and chairs, Nikolai enlarged the doll's decorations until they were much, much larger. When he was finished, he gestured to his birds.
If you please, he said.
One by one, they descended, picking up gold garlands and bells and brightly colored bows. They flew along the Nivar and artfully arranged themselves in the air, at Nikolai's direction, of course, over and around the tables. The evening sky chimed, and then it sparkled as Nikolai lit it with chandeliers of tiered candles.
And now to populate the scene, he said.
Dozens of dolls, women in burgundy tulle gowns, men in charcoal frock coats and trousers, with burgundy cravats to match, bloomed to human size. Their faces were finely featured in porcelain, their painted smiles joyful and flawless. In the dollhouse scene, they'd been the ones dancing. At Nikolai's fete, they would be the ones welcoming guests, pouring wine, and serving food. Next came the musicians. It was not a full orchestra, as Nikolai would have liked, more a large string section, but he would deal with what he had. The dolls set up their violins, violas, cellos, and double basses near an open expanse of ice, which would be the dancing, or, as the case might be, the skating, floor. Nikolai smiled at what he'd created, even though he was light-headed from exhaustion. His stomach growled too. He was hungry from all the exertion. Magic was as demanding, or even more so, as any physical activity.
Only one more thing.
Nikolai conjured tureens full of borscht, platters of baked sturgeon with mushrooms, and loaves of dense rye bread. There were baskets full of crackers to eat with sauerkraut, and plates full of cabbage piroshki, steaming hot. And of course, wine, and ice-cold vodka with an assortment of pickles to go with it. Later there would be dessert, including cranberry pastilla confections and deep-fried tzatziki, fat cottage cheese pancakes, served with honey, powdered sugar, and sour cream. This was a party for everyone in St. Petersburg, including the merchants and sailors and maids, not just the aristocracy. So Nikolai wanted the food and drink to reflect the preferences of everyday Russians. What a shame that many of the ingredients for tonight's feast had gone rancid, the flavor masked completely by magic. The people would blame the Cesarevich for their ills, their bodies and their minds sickened. And should Pasha show his face? Surely he would, for how could he not if the invitation had come ostensibly from him? The food that touched his lips would be even more potent. Possibly deadly. As Nikolai had promised, he would rob Pasha of the people's love, and then he'd kill him. Nikolai smirked. But it wasn't his usual smile, the kind with the single dimple in his cheek. It was sharper, darker, like Aijana's. He did not fully comprehend how much he'd changed. Chapter 30 The invitations arrived at the Winter Palace like a storm of paper seabirds, diving through doorways and down chimneys, as if plummeting into the ocean for fish. They landed at the feet of every attendant, footman and maid, and at the feet of Yuliana and Pasha, too. They were just winding down the evening with a game of chess, which Pasha was invariably going to lose. A servant rushed to pick the envelopes up off the carpet, and presented them to the Grand Princess and Cesarevich. Pasha stared at the envelope on his plate.
"Are you going to open it?"
Yuliana asked. He shook his head slowly.
The last message I received by a magical delivery did not go so well.
She reached over and touched her brother's arm to soothe him.
I'll do it then,
she said, and without waiting for his assent, Yuliana tore open the envelope and pulled out the heavy white card inside. She scrunched her face as she read the invitation.
I'm afraid to ask what it is, Pasha said.
Yuliana set the card on Pasha's plate.
Apparently you've invited all of St. Petersburg to a fete tonight. It begins in an hour.
Pasha looked at it and sighed.
I suppose, then, we'd better get dressed. But I suggest we go in disguise.
Chapter 31 At 11:15, Pasha stepped outside the Winter Palace. He stroked his blonde moustache, not real but convincing enough, and adjusted the fake spectacles on his nose. His uniform, too, was carefully planned, from a common soldier's hat down to his boots, all covered with a plain grey greatcoat. Yuliana linked her arm through his. She grumbled as she looked down at the worn brown coat Pasha had borrowed for her from a servant girl.
The wool itches,
Yuliana said.
It's better if we go to the fete like this, he said.
I know, but it still itches.
Pasha laughed. Blazes, it felt good to break the tension like that, if only for a second, and led the way toward the Nyavar, where Nikolai's party was already lively on the ice. Every man and woman in St. Petersburg appeared to be here. They skated to the music of a string orchestra, laughed beneath chandeliers of candles, and gold garlands and bells and bows, held aloft by stone birds in the night sky, devoured a feast and talked with their mouths full, chairs packed with merchants next to sailors, next to laundry girls. And all around them, life-size dolls with porcelain faces bustled about, refilling wine glasses and refreshing empty platters with more food. Pasha shivered. The dolls were beautiful, but they were also all wrong. Elegance tainted with haunting. They're like the Jack and Ballerina, gone spine-chillingly mad.
I think Nikolai himself has gone mad,
Yuliana said as she took in the scene.
Perhaps you should use your necklace to summon Vika. If the invitations went out only to the people of St. Petersburg, she won't have received one out on her island.
Pasha frowned. We've asked a great deal of her lately.
Give her a night at home in peace. Besides, you and I have been to enough fates in our lives that we can handle another one. We're merely gathering information.
Yuliana pursed her lips at him skeptically. A group of fishermen walked past, and one said,
This party is extraordinary.
He took a long swig from a bottle of vodka. Another nodded, a bottle in his hand, too.
Let's hope the Cesarevich does this for us every year.
A third fisherman chimed in.
If he does, I think I could get used to magic.
Hear, hear,
the first man said. He raised his bottle in the air, and the group guffawed and continued through the snow to the ice rink.
Well, that's a good thing, that they're beginning to accept magic,
Pasha whispered to Yuliana. She clutched his arm a bit more tightly.
It would be if you and Vika had truly created this fate, but it's Nikolai's. Something is bound to go bad.
Pasha shivered again. Someone cleared his throat behind them. Pasha nearly jumped out of his boots.
My apologies, Your Imperial Highness,
Ilya whispered as he leaned in.
But I only wanted to make my presence known, in the event that you need me.
Pasha settled back into his boots. He'd made the decision to tell the guard that he and Yuliana would arrive at the fete later, around midnight, which was partly true, for he'd only meant to steal through the party right now as reconnaissance, before making an official appearance, as himself, later on. But of course, if anyone would discover that he'd snuck out of the palace early, it was Ilya. This was, after all, why Pasha had chosen him to spy on Volkonsky and the constitutionalists. Ilya was awfully good at knowing and seeing things he wasn't supposed to know and see. Pasha's stomach growled.
"Perhaps you'd like something to eat while you investigate?" Ilya asked. "Not a bad idea." "It's a terrible idea," Yuliana said.
A life-size porcelain doll skated by, carrying a fresh tureen of borscht. Pasha inhaled deeply, the warmth of the beet soup wrapping around and through him, just as another doll glided up to him with a plate of miniature tarts filled with caramelized onions, Gruyere cheese, and thyme.
"Tarte à l'oignon?"
she asked in a dainty voice, perfectly suited for a porcelain doll. He smiled.
"Merci."
He popped one into his mouth as Yuliana cried out,
"Pasha!"
He swallowed and shrugged.
"I couldn't resist. It's been so long since supper, and tarte à l'oignon is one of my favorites."
Yuliana flung herself at him and shook him by the shoulders.
"I know, and Nikolai knows. Why else would he serve a French country tart at a party where all the other food is Russian?" "Sacré bleu,"
Pasha whispered. The sweetness of the onion was already turning acrid on his tongue. No, not acrid. Metallic. Yuliana was right. Nikolai had done this on purpose. He must have seen through Pasha's disguise. Of course he knew most of what Pasha had in his wardrobe, since they'd snuck out innumerable times together over the years, and sent a doll specifically with the tart.
"Yuliana!"
Pasha clutched at his throat with one hand, and his stomach with another. His knees gave way beneath him, as something sharp lanced through his insides. Ilya lunged and caught him.
"Quickly! We need to get him out of plain sight,"
Yuliana said to Ilya under her breath. She laughed, forcibly, and said loudly enough for those nearby to hear,
"You really shouldn't drink so much before eating."
Ilya hoisted Pasha's arm around his shoulder, and the two staggered back toward the palace, with Yuliana close behind. But Pasha doubled over after a few yards. He convulsed and coughed into the snow.
"I think I'm bleeding,"
he whispered when the fit had passed. Yuliana gasped as Pasha's hand came away from where he'd covered his mouth. It was slick and deep crimson.
"Here,"
Ilya said, steering them to the other side of the snowbank. It wasn't much, but it was some cover from the partygoers. Pasha collapsed. He coughed some more, and red spattered the dirty snow. His consciousness rapidly bled out with it. But just as everything was about to go black, Pasha grappled at the collar of his uniform and yanked the basalt necklace out. He clutched his fingers around it.
"Vika,"
he whispered.
"Can you hear me? I need you."
His voice and his lungs gave out, and then everything went as dark as the basalt. Chapter 32. Vika jerked upright from the log upon which she sat. She was home on Obchinan Island, next to Preobrazhensky Creek, but Pasha's voice was as clear as if he were sitting right beside her. He sounded like the bewildered boy who'd stumbled upon her here in the woods, in the middle of lightning and flame. The one who'd asked her for her first dance at his masquerade. The boy who'd almost kissed her in the maple grove. Unlike Nikolai, who had become increasingly, painfully unfamiliar, this sounded like the Pasha she knew. Vika's remaining resistance against him crumbled like a fortress made of sand.
"I hear you," she said. "And I'm coming."
Vika appeared at the snowbank along the Nevar moments later.
"He ate a tart that Nikolai tainted,"
Yuliana said. Vika took in the crimson snow. It was all she needed to know that whatever Pasha had consumed had been a tart only in appearance.
"Nikolai, what have you done?"
Her heart stopped beating. It resumed several seconds later, but the rhythm was different. Their mazurka was forever done. Vika's entire body drooped.
"Can you evanesce him back to the palace?"
Yuliana asked. Vika stared, half here but half still lamenting the loss of Nikolai.
Vika! What? Oh!
Vika shook her head, jostling away the heaviness that was Nikolai. She had before her a boy who was still here and who needed her attention, right now.
The Cesarevich is too fragile. I don't want to risk it. But I can cast a shroud, so that if anyone comes upon us, they'll see only a mound of snow.
She enchanted the air around them, then dropped to her knees.
Pasha, it's Vika. I'm here.
She was fully aware this was the first time in a long time that she'd called him by his name, in his presence. But that was because it finally felt necessary and right again. He wasn't just Your Imperial Highness. He was Pasha. He stirred, eyes closed and body limp.
Blood. Nikolai. Fitting. This is how it ends,
he muttered.
This is not how it ends,
Vika said.
I'm going to strip you from the waist up.
You'll do no such thing,
Yuliana said.
He's the heir to the throne. Well, he won't be heir if he dies, and I'll be much better able to see whatever's inside him if I strip off his clothes. So I'm going to do it whether it's proper or not.
He'll freeze to death.
Vika scowled but snapped her fingers, and a fire roared to life at her side. There was no wood, just flame rising out of the snow. Yuliana shut her mouth, another unprecedented move. But there was no time for Vika to gloat. She began to unbutton Pasha's greatcoat. He moaned and gripped it closed.
Shh! I'm trying to see where you've been hurt. Then I'm going to heal you.
She finished removing his greatcoat and took off his uniform jacket and shirt.
The rabbits are dancing in the clouds,
Pasha murmured.
They're pretty.
You're losing him,
Yuliana said.
Hurry!
Vika rested her hands on Pasha's muscled chest and listened to his pulse. It fluttered, but it was there. His breathing was ragged but consistent. Then he shivered.
Cold,
he said.
Winter is so cold. Even the polar bears are gone.
The fire wasn't enough. He needed heat directly on his skin. She could be that heat. Vika's temperature certainly rose a little at the thought. It wasn't appropriate in the least, but if he was dying, that called for drastic measures, whether respectable or not. Besides, this was about saving Pasha's life. Of course it was. She rested her cheek on Pasha's bare chest and curled her body alongside his, laying her arm across him, her hand on his right shoulder blade. But despite lying on the snow, Vika flushed at her proximity to him. She felt all his muscles, from fencing, from archery, from the myriad other activities he did, and she tensed. But Pasha sighed and relaxed against her. Yuliana, surprisingly, did not say a thing, and Ilya stood stoic, the consummate soldier. Vika breathed Pasha in. He was sweat and blood, but he was also soap and a hint of clove.
Don't think about him like that. He's the Cesarevich.
He's also a brave, wounded boy. He's Pasha.
Vika's resentment over the end of the game had already begun to thaw before this, but now the rest of it melted away. She shut her eyes. With her cheek pressed against him, she could more easily see the fibers of his flesh. Not literally see them, but she could sense them, how they wove together and layered, and where they were torn apart and frayed.
Oh, heavens!
What lay in his stomach might have looked like a tart when he ate it, but now it was a gear, like a component of one of Nikolai's machines. Except the spoke-like edges were razor-sharp, a wheel of knives in miniature. And that wheel had rolled all the way down Pasha's insides and left a shredded, bloody mess in its wake. Nikolai was probably pleased with himself for tricking Pasha, a boy who loved being in disguise, with a deadly weapon, also in disguise.
What happened to him?
Yuliana asked. Vika opened her eyes but didn't answer, only shook her head. Then she closed her eyes once more and lay back down on Pasha's chest.
I can fix him,
she told herself. She'd healed injuries in the animals on Opchinan Island for years. She'd stitched herself back together after the knife slashed through her organs at the end of the game.
Just like fixing a broken bone, I can do this, too. I have to.
She cast an enchantment to pin him down.
Pasha, this is going to hurt, but trust me. I know what I'm doing.
It was an utter lie, but she wasn't going to tell Pasha, or Yuliana, that. She just had to hope that the increase in Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic would be enough to push her power farther than she'd accomplished before, and that she'd be able to keep the magic steady. It was already jittering and sparking inside her, like racehorses about to take off on a steeplechase. With her head on his chest, Vika placed her hand above his stomach and focused on the spot where Nikolai's gear lay. She was going to evanesce it out, but it was imperative that she get it right, for she could not afford to evanesce away a crucial part of Pasha's body. She concentrated until she saw every sharp ridge, every protrusion, and every bit of muscle and organ and blood that touched the metal. Then Vika took a deep breath and imagined the gear transforming into bubbles. It dissolved, but as it did so, Pasha shrieked and shuddered beneath the enchantment that kept him immobilized against the ground. Yuliana and Ilya jumped forward at his cries. Vika threw a wave of magic to keep them back.
There's a wheel of knives inside his body that is making its way out,
she said, trying to maintain as even a voice as possible.
The evanescing particles still need a path on which to travel, so a wound has opened, and he's feeling it right now.
Vika pressed her cheek against Pasha's chest and shook along with him, her trembling coming from holding tightly to the magic to control it, and his from the pain. She blew what she hoped was warm, numbing air from her lips to the nearly undetectable opening on his abdomen from which the bubbles streamed. As the gear's particles made their way out of Pasha's body, Vika could feel them scraping against the wet fibers of his flesh while they tore open an exit route. She cringed, feeling Pasha's screams as if they were her own. But still, she held the magic steady, even though it wanted to burst out like water freeing itself from a dam. Finally, the last of the gear came out. It rematerialized in Vika's palm, and she dropped it onto the snow, red splattering on white. She shook nearly as wretchedly as Pasha did. But she couldn't take too long, for Pasha's insides had been shredded, and he would die soon if she didn't save him. Keeping her face pressed to his chest above his heart, Vika splayed her hands over Pasha's stomach and at the base of his throat.
Knit yourselves back together,
she commanded the sinews of his muscle. Now she could let the magic flow more freely, for she wasn't extracting knives anymore. The power gushed forth smoothly, like warm honey. She guided Pasha's broken muscle fibers. The veins and nerves that crisscrossed his torso slowly wove themselves back into place. He cried out as she guided his organs back together again, his entire body convulsed.
I've got you,
Vika wrapped herself around him tighter.
Shh, I've got you.
And then, finally, the last of his muscles smoothed over.
Thank goodness,
Vika collapsed on top of him. Her basalt pendant lay askew on his chest. She almost kissed it. Kissed him. But Vika tore her gaze away. She had to get him somewhere that was actually warm and safe for him to recover. She had to stop thinking about him as more than whatever he was. Her employer, her ruler, her friend.
Let's go,
she said. Then, knowing he was slightly less fragile now, she evanesced Pasha back to the Winter Palace. Chapter 33 Nikolai had stayed for most of the fete, although he'd remained shrouded and hidden in the dark. It had been a pleasure, at first, to to watch his plans fulfilled, to see people eating and laughing and toasting Pasha for the party. And then there had been the moment when he'd recognized Pasha in the crowd and sent the doll with the tartre l'oignon. Nikolai had laughed, the thrill of power washing over him, cold rushing through his veins. But his laughter had been cut off by Vika's appearance. He'd watched helplessly while she healed Pasha, both unable to get past her shield and horribly fascinated by the work she undertook. For Nikolai's poisoned gear should have shredded Pasha's insides beyond repair. It wasn't a clean slice like a knife. The growth of Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic was affecting Vika's strength, too. As she evanesced them away, Nikolai threw his top hat into the snow. His knuckles cracked as he balled his hands into fists. Damn it! Pasha was still alive. And Vika? How quickly she'd appeared at Pasha's side, and how tenderly she'd nursed him. Nikolai grumbled and glared at the revelers around him. Many were beginning to clutch at their stomachs, their complexions tinted slightly green now, rather than ruddy from the wind and snow.
"The fate is over,"
he said. He snapped at his stone birds. They dropped their decorations from the sky and started to dive at the partygoers instead. People shrieked, fell to their hands and knees on the ice, and cowered under tables. The birds smashed around them, explosions of rock, leaving nothing but dust. Nikolai nodded at the dolls, who until that second had still been bustling about, serving dessert and wine. Now they began to fling whatever they had in their hands, food and platters and bottles, at the crowds beneath the tables. The people screamed even louder. They crawled out of their hiding places and scrambled to their feet, standing, then falling, then trying to get up again on the icy Nyavar. Wine and vodka bottles shattered. Plates crashed. Saniki pancakes splattered everywhere, making the ground even more perilous, with cottage cheese and honey on top of the already slippery ice. Everyone fled. Nikolai's dolls made sure of it. And then, when the last of the partygoers was gone, he slashed an arm through the air and decapitated all the dolls. Their lifeless bodies smacked into the ice, their porcelain heads shattering. The Nyavar was a graveyard of revelry and regret. Nikolai's edges were a blur. Standing suddenly seemed too much effort. He sank down onto the bank of snow. He shivered, but not from the cold that had fueled his rampage, for he'd expended so much energy. He could feel only a trace of that powerful chill inside. Instead, it was the actual weather that got to him. He pulled his greatcoat more tightly around himself. The more Nikolai faded, the less single-mindedly angry he became. Or was it the other way around? Regardless, as he sat on the snow, taking in the disastrous remnants of his party, he began to remember another time when Pasha had fallen ill. Nikolai had been 14 then, and Pasha 13. They'd spent an afternoon in the woods, near Zarsko Selo, building elaborate traps to capture squirrels. However, they had used up all their lunch as bait, and after a few hours, Pasha complained of starving. Nikolai, in his youthful arrogance, picked mushrooms, charmed the poison out of them, and gave them to Pasha, assuring him they were safe to eat. Pasha gobbled them up without hesitation, and 15 minutes later, he was pale and sweating, and then fell unconscious. Nikolai panicked, punched Pasha in the stomach to try to make him vomit, shook him to try to jostle him awake. Finally, Nikolai's senses returned, and he levitated Pasha and charged through the forest to their horses. He'd never ridden faster than that in his life, to rush his best friend back to the palace at Zarsko Selo. Now Nikolai looked at the spot near the fate where Pasha had lain only minutes before. What have I done? But immediately, a tiny chill roused itself and trickled in his veins. No, this is what I wanted. Well, not exactly this, for Nikolai had wanted Pasha dead, and he was not. But this devastation was part of a plan that Nikolai had set in motion, and he would see it through. He was not a quitter. The coldness inside him, although running thin, persisted. Nikolai stood. He needed to glean more energy. He tripped, though, and nearly toppled into the snow. First, before finding another source of energy, he needed some rest, to get his head straight again, to refocus. He turned toward the black moth. And this time, he looked forward to the sordid inn. Chapter 34 The clock on Madame Boulanger's wall struck midnight, as Renata kneaded dough for the bread the bakers would put in the ovens in a few hours. And yet, despite how late it was, Renata felt lighter on her feet. A second wind, perhaps, like the kind that comes after one has been awake so long. One bypasses sleep and starts over again. But Renata frowned. This was more than that. It was as if her blood was twirling through her veins, when all it was supposed to do was flow from heart to limbs and back again. Heavens! She knew this sensation, like she'd drunk nectar offered by mischievous fairies. It had been the same when Aijana had transferred energy to her earlier tonight. Unforgettable not only for the feeling itself, but also for the surprise that embracing a corpse could have produced such impish joy. Now that thrill whirled through her veins, except it was wilder and brighter than before.
I wonder if this is how magic feels to Nikolai.
She laughed at the thought. Magic? In me? How silly. But then, why not? The floor was covered in a fresh dusting of flour from the dough she'd just kneaded. Renata scrunched her face and stared at a broom in the corner.
Sweep,
she said, as she snapped twice like she'd seen Nikolai do. The broom remained stubbornly in the corner. Renata glanced over her shoulder. Not that there was anyone else inside the bakery. Still, she flushed, embarrassed for even half hoping she could use magic like an enchanter could. She was only a servant girl, after all. She poured herself a cup of tea and leaned against the pastry display. The steam curled up like wispy acrobats, somersaulting into the air. She took a sip, but the tea scalded her tongue.
Ah, hurry up and cool down.
Renata set the cup on the counter and turned back to her bread dough, setting each round in a basket and covering it with a towel for its final rise. Then she picked up the broom that had refused to budge and swept the floor as ordinary people did. But behind her, the steam acrobats had vanished, and the tea had already, much quicker than normal, cooled enough to drink. Chapter 35 Vika sat in an armchair in Pasha's room, and watched as the blue and gold blankets that warmed the Cesarevich's bare chest rose and fell with his breath. Yuliana had left at 1 o'clock to rest, and had promised to come back well before sunrise. But for a little longer, Vika could be with Pasha alone. The crease between his brows was relaxed, and his blonde lashes fluttered against his cheeks in what was hopefully a happy dream. In his sleep, he was just an unguarded boy. She bit her lip, though, because when Pasha woke, that crease between his brows would reappear, carrying with it the weight of being attacked by his brother, on top of all the other responsibilities and worries that being the next Tsar would hold. But hadn't they all changed? Life happened without permission, and it swept everyone along in its violent wake. Pasha was no longer the innocent Cesarevich. Vika was no longer a carefree girl from the forest. And Nikolai? Vika wasn't sure what Nikolai was now, but he was no longer purely elegance and melancholy. He was still those things, but twisted and magnified. Nikolai and Vika were no longer two sides of the same enchanting coin. How could she save him if she couldn't even understand him anymore? Her stomach turned. Beneath the covers, Pasha stirred. Vika stood and hurried to his side. He groaned as he found his way back to consciousness. As Vika had predicted, the crease on his forehead reappeared even before his eyes opened. He squinted at the single lamp that lit the room. Then he turned to his bedside.
Vika?
Pasha's voice rasped, but he moved to sit up as soon as he saw her.
Don't strain yourself.
She held out her hand as if to stop him. Pasha sat up anyway. Of course he did. He was the Cesarevich, and that meant he did whatever he wanted. That is, unless Yuliana said otherwise.
You saved my life.
Vika shrugged.
You're terribly nonchalant,
Pasha said.
It's as if you do this every day.
He laughed, but it was flatter than usual. Weighed down, most likely, by why it had been necessary to save him in the first place. Then he stopped laughing altogether, and held on to his stomach. Magic might have put his pieces back together, but that didn't mean he wouldn't feel the after-effects, like a patient after surgery. Pasha managed to shoot Vika a smile, though, through the pain. Vika smiled, too. It was nearly impossible not to in reaction to his charm. Plus, without the blankets covering him, she could see the ripples of muscle on his chest and abdomen. She tried not to stare.
I'd rather not have to stitch you back together every day. It's not exactly easy, and I can't guarantee it'll work every time. So if you don't mind, try not to get yourself almost killed again, all right?
I'll try, he said. But I must warn you, the Tsars are often high on assassination target lists.
Good thing you're not Tsar yet, then.
As soon as she said it, Vika wanted to take it back.
Really?
She chastised herself.
You said that in the midst of everything that's happening?
Pasha let out a curt laugh.
Right. Good thing I'm not yet Tsar.
I am an idiot,
Vika thought. Pasha brushed his fingers over the place where Vika had extracted Nikolai's gear. Once, twice, three times.
I'm sorry about what I just said.
Vika couldn't take her eyes off Pasha's fingers, still tracing and retracing where his brother had wounded him.
But I've been thinking. I ought to protect you better.
Pasha shook his head.
You saved me. There's not much better than that.
No, I meant a permanent shield, which I'd thought before was impossible, because that sort of magic requires a great deal of power, and therefore proximity. But now that Bolshevnoi Duplo is generating more magic than ever before...
You might be able to do it.
His fingers ceased their obsessive tracing.
Might. I'll try. But that doesn't mean you can toss caution to the wind. It's possible it won't work, and we won't know until Nikolai tries to harm you again.
Pasha cringed. Vika did too, for she had said it as if another attack by Nikolai was inevitable. She and Pasha both knew it to be true, even if they didn't want it to be.
Do I need to, do anything?
He asked.
No, just sit still.
Vika stood from her chair, but took a second to breathe and feel the magic sparking inside her. It brightened even more as she called to it, so much so that she almost felt there was a torch within. She welcomed its eager flames. She was, in this moment, pleased that magic was no longer secret, that the people's belief had stoked more power for her to use. And then she focused on Pasha, outlined the space around him with her eyes, and conjured an invisible shield around him. She imagined it as a soft, flexible material, one that would not repel bullets or enchantments, but rather would absorb them until she could dispel them safely. It seemed a better approach than conjuring a rigid barrier like a more traditional shield, for something like that could potentially shatter. Then again, all this was theory. Vika didn't even know if this enchantment would hold. She stumbled a bit when she finished. Conjuring a shield that strong, and to last indefinitely, had taken more out of her than she expected.
"Sit and rest," Pasha said, as he patted the edge of the mattress. "And thank you."
Vika eyed the spot where Pasha's hand lay. Heat flashed through her again, but not from magic this time. It would be incredibly improper to sit on any boy's bed, but especially the future Tsar's. Not that Vika hadn't already been ridiculously close when she'd healed him, nor had she ever been constrained by propriety before. But still, this seemed different. Perhaps she was growing up and becoming more responsible. Perhaps she was learning to play by the rules.
Oh, please,
Vika scowled at herself.
As if I ever want to be the sort who plays by the rules.
She sank onto the edge of Pasha's bed. She did, however, sit closer to his feet than his hand, and she kept both her own feet firmly planted on the ground. She was an imperial enchanter and a baroness, after all. Pasha retracted his hand and frowned.
I wasn't going to do anything untoward. I know,
Vika said, even though she didn't. Or maybe she was worried that she would be the one to do something untoward. So great was her relief that Pasha was all right, and that her attempt to heal him had actually worked. Even though she was no longer angry at him, and even though she could no longer love Nikolai, not as Nikolai was, Vika would not allow herself to fall into someone else's arms, simply because they were open. She didn't say all that, though. Instead, she asked,
What if Yuliana came in and thought there was something inappropriate going on? I didn't know you cared what others thought. I don't.
Vika crossed her arms, but then she dropped them to her sides, onto the blankets.
Well, sometimes I do.
Pasha smiled.
All right, sit far away if it makes you feel better.
He had the grace not to rub it in that Vika had been acting, well, self-important.
Just because he wanted to kiss me once on Letney Isle doesn't mean he always wants to kiss me when we're alone, she thought. Or that he even wants to kiss me at all, after the nasty things I've said.
But then Pasha's hand crept toward hers on the bedspread, although he stopped before he actually touched Vika. His fingers were long and impeccably manicured, evidence of his life in the Winter Palace. Hers were smaller, of course, with nails smooth but permanently stained from dirt beneath them, a fond reminder of her life in the unkempt woods of Ovchinen Island. When she glanced up, she found he was looking at their hands, too.
There's a story that Plato told,
he said softly,
that people were once happy and whole. They were so powerful, they seemed a threat to Olympus. So Zeus split each person in two, such that they were then halves, each imperfect and damned to wander the earth, flawed and no longer competition for the gods. But if a half happened upon his or her other side, they could be united, happy and whole and perfect again.
Vika looked at their hands as she contemplated the anecdote.
So I'm a half?
She asked.
Everyone is a half. Then you're saying I'm imperfect?
Pasha laughed.
Of course, that's what you'd gather from my story. Everyone is imperfect. That's the point. You can't keep looking for perfection, because it doesn't exist on its own. Only when you're united as a whole. Exactly. Then somehow, two imperfect halves come together and form a perfect whole.
He leaned a little bit forward so his fingertips could just graze hers. Vika's entire body tingled. Pasha retracted his hand and smiled to himself.
What?
Vika asked. Pasha shook his head, still smiling.
Nothing, just... That was nice. I'd like to keep that moment. I'm going to tuck it away somewhere safe.
Vika blushed at his sweetness. This was why she'd liked him in the past. This pure Pasha, who could appreciate a single moment of life, even in the midst of attempted murder and an unknown future. He closed his eyes and leaned back against the headboard. She listened to him breathe, and once again thanked the heavens, and magic, that he was still alive to do so. Then Pasha opened his eyes, and the crease between his brows reappeared, heralding the end of their respite.
I suppose we should discuss how to deal with Nikolai. He's clearly gone beyond civil disobedience now.
Pasha's eyes were rimmed red, and his hand went to his stomach again.
I can't believe he actually tried to kill me.
Vika's breath caught, as she felt again those memories of Nikolai pulling and piercing her at the same time.
Yuliana wants him dead,
Pasha said softly. Vika clutched the bedspread in her fist, even though she'd known this was coming.
And what do you want? Too many things. Including not making the same mistakes again.
Pasha bit his knuckles as he thought.
But what can be done? He tried to kill me, Vika. My own brother. And part of me has already died, just by Nikolai making the attempt.
Pasha pounded his chest, as if trying to revive his heart.
You have to catch him, Vika. And I hate to ask this of you, but then you'll also have to help to execute him. An enchanter won't die by simple hanging.
For a moment, Vika lost control of the powerful magic in her fingertips, and she singed the bedspread. Smoke spiraled up in menacing swirls. Pasha jerked back. She doused the smoke, but didn't apologize. Vika was sorry for burning the blanket, but she was not sorry for having and showing her emotions. She had been tasked with killing Nikolai 5 times during the game. She would not do it again, not if there was any possibility of saving him. But Vika turned to Pasha and said,
I'm at your command.
She might be a dragon on a leash, but she was still a dragon. She would stall. She'd find a way to fix this, bracelet or not. Or, like witches, she and Nikolai would both burn. Chapter 36 Ilya returned to the barracks after seeing the Cesarevich back to the Winter Palace. He preferred staying in the guards' quarters, even though his family's mansion was only a few streets away. As the fourth son, no one paid him much attention, for there was hardly enough attention to go around for 3 boys, let alone for number 4. But Major General Volkonsky had noticed Ilya when he was a cadet training for the guard, and ever since then, the army felt more like home to Ilya than his parents and brothers at Koshkin Place. Tonight, however, he was not greeted by smacks on the back from his fellow soldiers, but instead by their retching into buckets and moaning through cold sweats in their beds. The sole medic darted from cot to cot, also sweating, but from exertion rather than whatever ailed the rest of the men.
What happened, Boris?
Ilya asked, throwing his greatcoat onto a hook and rolling up his sleeves to help in whatever manner he could. Boris made the sign of the cross across his body.
They all went to the fete on the Neva and ate the magical food and wine. It's made everyone violently ill. No good can come of gifts from the devil, and the Cesarevich and his witch are proof.
Ilya lowered his voice.
You could be arrested for speaking against the Cesarevich like that.
After tonight, see if there aren't more men who agree with me.
Boris threw his arms in the air and gestured at the soldiers around them.
Besides, I doubt anyone can hear me above this noise.
More retching and groaning echoed through the barracks.
What can I do to help?
You can start by emptying buckets. We're going to need more soon.
Ilya made the error of looking into one and gagged, but he was a soldier and had spent his share of time on latrine duty in school, so he pulled a handkerchief out of his pocket, tied it around his nose and mouth, and picked up the bucket. Come tomorrow, the underground movement for a constitutional monarchy would have plenty of men to recruit. They could use as many soldiers as possible for their cause, as they were planning a revolt in the summer, and Volkonsky would count on Ilya to convince these men to turn on the Tsardom. Ilya's stomach twisted again, although this time it was because the reality of the revolt drew closer, and it wasn't against Tsar Alexander now, as originally planned. Since the Tsar was dead, it would be a revolt against Pasha, whom Ilya actually liked. These were the reasons Ilya hadn't reported anything to Pasha about Volkonsky. Ilya's loyalties were conflicted in too many ways. But he believed in the constitutionalists' cause. Nobles and serfs and everyone in between should be equal. Even as the fourth son of an aristocratic family, he'd felt the sting of being cast aside as unimportant. He could hardly even